I walk my dog Wally past an elementary school a couple of times every day. He's a very energetic dog and requires lots of walking. And I like walking past the school because there are always construction paper crafts taped to the windows. This week was especially fun as kids traced their hands to make turkeys. I was glad to know that turkey hand tracing technology has not changed since I was in elementary school. This is still the best way to make a turkey. These were very creative children. The colors of the turkey's feathers were red and orange and blue and green. There were very few brown turkeys. One was a Sounders turkey. One was painted purple with a silver W on its tummy. Team Spirit Turkeys. All the turkeys had bright red smiling lips. Apparently these were pardoned turkeys. But turkeys weren't the only creations adorning the windows of the school. Dreidels were also popular this week, reminding me that this week we celebrated the intersection of two holidays, Thanksgiving and Hanukkah. The 2 days rarely overlap, and they won't again for a few tens of thousands of years. Or how long it's going to take me to work off all the pie I ate on Thursday. Both Thanksgiving and Hanukkah are days of celebration that are they're focused on family, multiple generations gathering around dining room tables and card tables and coffee tables crowded together for a feast. The joyful feast to celebrate survival. Because survival is why we celebrate Thanksgiving. A few hundred years ago, Thanksgiving festivals were common in Spain and in England. Communities held feasts, Thanksgivings, they called them, to celebrate the end of a war or the end of a drought or a really good harvest. When Spanish pilgrims came to the East Coast in 1607 to what is now Virginia, they imported the tradition, and the Jamestown colony followed suit. In Jamestown, Thanksgiving was a 3-day event, sort of the Lollapalooza of Thanksgivings, the Woodstock of Thanksgivings. 90 Native Americans and the 53 settlers of all ages, children, adults, and the elderly, who happened to survive through that first horrible winter, freezing weather, multiple diseases, hunger, bitter cold. Thanksgiving was a joyous exhalation. We did it. We made it. But it was tinged with grief. We made it, but so many other people didn't. So if we're going to talk about Thanksgivica, what about the Ukka? We know that Hanukkah has to do with candles and latkes. And Rabbi Wisnia, who is a very, very funny rabbi in Princeton, New Jersey, gave this brief synopsis of Hanukkah and all other Jewish religious holidays. They tried to kill us. We won! Let's eat. But if you want more detail, Hanukkah is a fairly minor Jewish holiday. It's sort of a bigger deal in the United States because people think of it as the Jewish Christmas, but it's not really that big of a holiday for Jews. The Jewish country of Judea was in Syria, as I told the children, and being part of Syria was fine under King Antioch III because he thought it was fine if the Jews worshipped however they wanted. But he was a hands-off king. His son, Antioch IV, was not. Antioch IV took over the kingdom, installed altars to Zeus in the Jews' temple. His soldiers went town to town telling people to convert or die, and they had to eat pork and bow to an idol to prove that they had converted. Antioch was a hands-on king, a kind of hands-around-your-neck hands-on king. Many people died, children, elderly people, everybody. People ran from marauding soldiers. It was a time of utter terror. Villagers didn't wonder, would the troops come? They wondered when the troops would come. The leader of one village was Mattathias Maccabee. When the terrorizing army arrived in his town, they said, look, if you can convince people in this town to just convert, no funny business, no fighting, we will give you a huge amount of money and a royal title. Mattathias refused, and he killed the man who offered the bribe, which was a pretty big message, and he led all of the villagers into the wilderness so that they could organize a rebellion. Mattathias died in the winter, as did a lot of other people that year, because the winter was very cold in the wilderness. But his son took over the rebellion, and his name was Judah the Hammer, because he was really good at guerrilla warfare. While the villagers were really small in number, the Hammer was quite good at training them. And they smashed army after army until King Antioch decided it was better off if he just let the Jews practice what they wanted to practice, as long as they called off Judah Maccabee. The Jews agreed, Maccabee surrendered, and the reign of terror was over. Life could return to normal, and the Holy Temple once again belonged to the Jews. So out went the statue of Zeus, and in came a festival of lights called Hanukkah, which means dedication. The focus was on lighting lamps and bonfires, because every year during the holy days, Jews weren't allowed to light lamps in case that lamp meant that they were worshiping their God. So Hanukkah celebrates that a group of poor Jews battled one of the largest armies in the world, and they won. And for 8 days, they celebrated with a fire burning in the temple. It's funny because initially Thanksgiving and Hanukkah seem like a bad matchup. They seem really different, but it isn't all that crazy that they coincide. Rabbi David Kunin, who is in Massachusetts over in Meldon, said that Thanksgivica is not such a stretch, as both are Thanksgiving festivals. Both are related to the desire to heal and to express gratitude for having survived, to promote a vision of the future when peace will once again reign. Both tell us that we should take the long view that good will eventually triumph over evil. So I like Thanksgiving and Hanukkah being at the same time. It makes sense. But this year, my celebration of those two holy days were overshadowed by the stark reality that while the first Thanksgiving in the United States was about the new settlers' joy at surviving a long and harsh winter, and the first Hanukkah was a celebration of the Maccabees regaining safety after a regime of terror, we in the U.S. are still in quite a bit of danger. We don't have marauding soldiers. We don't have a bitter winter, not in Seattle anyway. But we're still under the constant threat of gun violence. Now, this might seem like a crazy exaggeration. The Maccabees were at war, after all. But in 2010, more kids died from gun violence in the US than all the soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq, which were wars that we were actively fighting in. But not only did more kids die here in the U.S. during that time, 5 times more kids died. That's a huge number of people, children. That's just the kids. Kids in the U.S. are 7 times more likely than the kids in other healthy, high-income countries, 7 times more likely to die than kids in other countries that have high incomes. I've heard of American exceptionalism, but this isn't the kind of exceptional I want to be. December 14th is coming up, and it's the first anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. A day when, in less than 15 minutes, a gunman who was obsessed with mass shootings killed 20 kids and 6 adults on an otherwise ordinary, quiet day in Connecticut. Adam Lanza was the gunman, and he is a total mystery. He lived at home with his mom. He was into guns, but just at the firing range. He'd never been in any kind of trouble. He didn't work. He played Dance Dance Revolution and Super Mario Brothers all day. Seems pretty innocuous. But then he went to an elementary school and killed 27 people and himself. He lived near the elementary school. He went there for a couple of years when he was little, but then he transferred to a Catholic school. But he had easy access to guns and ammunition, and police found a detailed analysis of other school shootings. He had spreadsheets listing the kinds of weapons used and how many victims there were. Very strange. So on December 14th, Adam shot his mother, and he drove her car to the school, and he shot through the glass doors. Now, he had a semi-automatic weapon, which is a gun used by militaries all over the world. I looked at the picture of it. It's quite large, and people use them in Jordan and Iraq, and even the United States military uses this gun. And it's totally legal to buy in the United States, even though it's this huge thing. He stepped into a classroom and he killed 20 children, all first and second graders, teeny little people, and six adults. In a few quick minutes, the children, who are Charlotte, Daniel, Olivia, Josephine, Dylan, Madeline, Catherine, Chase, Jesse, Anna, James, Grace, Emil, Noah, Carolyn, Jessica, Eviel, Benjamin, and Allison, were dead. And so were the teachers and teachers' aides. And then he shot himself. There were heroes like Judah Maccabee in the school. A special ed teacher's assistant threw herself between a six-year-old boy and the gunman, dying in her attempt to save him. The principal and the school psychologist, as soon as they heard shots, ran out to apprehend the gunman. No thought at all that they might be hurt. Just wanted to save the kids. And their warning yells that there was a shooter in the school probably saved lots of children, because at that point the school went into lockdown. There were a raft of brave teachers and librarians who shoved kids into storage units that were only this high, that put kids behind filing cabinets and into closets that locked doors and barricaded them with desks. And there were survivors that day. There was a little girl who played dead while Adam shot all of her classmates. She ran out of the school yelling, "Mommy, Mommy, I'm okay, but all my friends are dead." But this battle, this dive for safety, the children that were saved, well, it doesn't end with Sandy Hook. Since that terrible day, at least 11,000 people have died from gun violence just in this country. We've had 16 more mass shootings, including the one in Federal Way last spring that killed four people. I'm afraid what we need is more heroes, not people to throw themselves in front of bullets, but to throw themselves in front of the NRA. Guns are a controversial topic in this country due to the incredibly strong lobbying group, the National Rifle Association. Now, U.S. gun owners can be thought of in three categories. There are people that hunt, there are people that have guns because they believe it makes them safer in their home, and they are constitutionalists. Most members of the NRA are constitutionalists. Constitutionalists believe that the U.S. government could come for us at any time and that they need guns to protect them. It's the group that spawns militias, and they oppose any sort of gun safety measure, no matter how small it is. The NRA is run by constitutionalists, and you might remember after Sandy Hook, they lamented that more teachers didn't have guns so that they could have shot Adam Lazara before he shot children. Even really no-brainer safety solutions, like when the iconic gun manufacturer Smith & Wesson agreed to work with the U.S. government to design better safety latches on triggers. Well, the NRA called for a boycott of that company, and their stock tanked. They pulled out of that agreement, and that was just for better trigger safety locks. Last spring, after Sandy Hook, a bill requiring universal background checks for purchasing guns, so looking into people's backgrounds to see if they're felons or violent or whatever, went to the Senate, and it was defeated despite most Americans that were polled saying that they were really in favor of it. So now gun safety is a state-by-state issue. It's a long and slow road, but fortunately one that we can have a lot of influence on because it is so local. And that's why I need you to be Judah Maccabees. It's time that we were the hammer. Like the teacher who sacrificed her life for a student, like the principal who threw herself in front of a gunman trying to save the kids, we have to stand up for the children in our community that are in danger. Washington State is currently working toward Initiative 594, which requires background checks for all gun sales. So guns aren't becoming illegal, grandma can still go duck hunting, but we want people to have background checks before they buy guns. Currently, background checks are required for sales at licensed dealers. But almost half of gun sales aren't at licensed dealers. They're at big gun shows or they're person to person on Craigslist. So no background check is required. It's a big loophole. This means pretty much anyone over the age of 18 can buy a semi-automatic weapon in the state of Washington. Semi-automatic weapon like our Marines learn to use when they're abroad. Groups like the Washington Alliance for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action, of which our wonderful Kate Beck is a leader, are collecting the 325,000 signatures required to put 594 in front of legislators. At that point, the legislature of Washington can pass the bill. That's our first choice. That'd be number one. They can defeat it. That's the bad choice. Or they can punt it to the voters, which means we would vote on it in November. So, what does this have to do with us? Remember last year when we worked together and we put a lot of time and effort into passing Referendum 74, and it felt really good because we were a part of it and we really lived our faith. We were spiritual activists. Let's do it again. This time, let's protect our most vulnerable citizens, the most helpless people among us, the first and second graders, the children. Several parents in this congregation from different families told me that the hardest day of their entire life was the day after Sandy Hook when they had to send their children to school, putting kids on the bus, dropping them off at the front door of the school, knowing who knows. I'm sure you empathize. But together we can get universal background checks. This is possible. This is one we could really win. And it's going to make a big difference. And it's going to allow parents to feel safer sending their kids out to a place that we thought was safe, school. So here's what we're going to do. Well, this Wednesday, and I know it's short notice, but if you can make it, please join me. This Wednesday, we're going to phone bank at University Unitarian. So just down the hill in Maple Leaf. And we're going to invite people to a December 14th memorial for Sandy Hook. And we're going to talk to other people about volunteering to gather signatures and do other things. So for the most part, we'll be calling supporters. So this isn't scary phone banking. This is friendly phone banking. And that's from 6 to 8. If you want to go and meet here, I'll meet you at 5:40. And I'll put all this on the Facebook and page and the website, so you don't have to remember. We can carpool or we can meet there. On the 14th, from 5:30 to 6:30, First United Methodist at Seattle Center is hosting a wonderful interfaith Sandy Hook Memorial Service. That's really going to be...
They suck money out of your wallet, upgrades you.
Hey, Brian. Can we talk later?
No.
Okay, I'll talk to you later. So, it's all right. Feelings run high. So at 5:30, the United Methodists are going to host a Sandy Hook Memorial that'll be focused on what can we do to help the situation, what can we do to end gun violence in our state, and that's on the 14th. So that's not this Saturday night, but next Saturday night. And then on the 17th of January, which is a little ways out, it's a Friday, we're going to go to Olympia, and we're going to talk to our legislators about what we can do. And the more of us can go, the better. These people know we vote them into office. It's important to remind them that we have opinions and feelings about these things. Hanukkah was celebrated because a small group of citizens stood up for the safety of everyone in their community. They demanded safety for their children and for themselves, and too many souls... sacred, frail souls in very tender shells are in danger right now because of a bullying lobbyist group called the NRA. We don't need to outlaw every gun in the United States. I'm not worried about skeet shooters, after all. But I won't feel like the children in this congregation, the children who were just up here a minute ago, I'm not going to feel like they're really safe until we have universal background checks. As Unitarian Universalists, we strive to live by seven principles. And the fifth principle is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. My conscience is bothering me because I didn't stand up for gun safety in time to save the 20 children who died at Sandy Hook. But now is the time to create a safer world, a world we can be thankful for at every future Thanksgiving.